Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is supported in part with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Twin Cities Picture Show is out in paperback, and wow, with the renovation of the North Shore and its triumphant reopening fresh in our minds, it's a perfect time to talk about this wonderful book. The author, Dave Kenny, joins us on the line this morning. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Lisa.
Question number one, when does Minnesota Picture Show come out?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about that for a long time, and you're going to have to just speak to my publisher about it, the Minnesota Historical Society Press. We'll see if we can get that done. I think you're right. There's so many great old theaters that are still sometimes in operation, like the North Shore. Sometimes are sitting around waiting to be brought back to life. It would be a wonderful thing to do, but just haven't had time to get around to it yet.
Rochester Chateau Theater, downtown. I worked at a dress shop briefly when I was in high school, right across the street from the Chateau. What a magical place it was to go into that old theater, and on either side, it was made to look like castles and parapets and different towers, and then, of course, there were, like, stars sparkling up above your head.
Yep.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah, that was a type of architecture that was called atmospheric, and they were very popular during the 1920s, and I believe that's when the Chateau was sort of turned into that theater, was around that time. But there were a number of them in Minnesota. That's probably one of the best known. There were a couple others. They're in Minneapolis right now. We still have what's called the Suburban World. But it was originally designed as an atmospheric, too. But those are wonderful theaters to go to.
It's
a whole new world.
They really are. And it was really interesting as I read the introduction. I realized how we may not even necessarily remember the movie, but we remember the dates. Or we remember, you know, I went on this, you know, on my first date to see a movie at this theater.
Right.
Or I, you know, this is the, you know, my group of friends, we all went that evening and remember we had so much fun and we went to this theater. And again, you may or may not remember the movie. The North Shore's renaissance here in Duluth, you could almost write Minnesota Picture Show. And the North Shore could sort of be the poster child for all of the different chapters that you include in this book. It begins, of course, with talking about the age of elegance in the 20s when these theaters were first being built. And I was fascinated because I'd never thought about it before, that one of the things that made these theaters become increasingly popular is that even though it was kind of, you know, MacGyvered by current standards, they had air conditioning.
Yeah, it was, and I'm not real sure what type of air conditioning the North Shore had when it was first opened, but if it was like a lot of them at the time, many of them depended on basically having a bunch of ice or having cold water pumped in and then sort of circulated through the buildings. But it was a huge, huge thing. Obviously, during the summer, people didn't want to come into a packed building and just swelter for a couple hours to watch a film. So the air conditioning was a really big part of those early years in the theaters.
And, of course, now we go to theaters in the summer so that we can sit in the air conditioning.
Yeah, yeah.
So, which I thought was fascinating, because when we just can't, you know, if we live in an unair-conditioned place when we just can't take it anymore, then we hire ourselves off to the movie theater. So I've got all of these sticky notes in this book. This isn't really kind of clumsy. I was also fascinated to learn that ushers began, for the most part, as women, pretty young women in uniform. And apparently then the people making decisions at that time felt that, what, they couldn't get tough enough on the movie patrons and they needed to get college guys in there to establish order? What was that about?
I think that was part of it. Not that I don't think people were rioting in the movie theaters or something, but But there were probably a few different reasons that the movie theater owners gave for that. And one of them, I think, had to do probably with the fact that there were a lot of men who had come back from World War One, I don't know, they had learned the ways of the military and knew how to get people to march in line and that type of thing. And you're right. There were a lot of young women who got their first jobs in movie theaters and then were sort of unceremoniously told, nope, not anymore.
They were dumped behind the popcorn machine.
Yeah, exactly.
And that became their gig. That was the thing that they were supposed to do. So the silent movie era ended in 1927, and these theaters had to buy you don't think about it, but of course they had to re-equip with completely new technology,
mm-hmm.
Because now they had to equip for talkies.
Right.
And so that was an interesting thing that happened. And then in the early years of the Depression, I know I grew up, dad was born in 21, mom was born in 31. Mom was the movie nut. Of course, they lived in town. Mm-hmm. But I grew up hearing, you know, about how people love to go to movies because it kind of took their minds off everything that was going on. But in the very early years of the Depression, people were kind of freaked out about spending a dime on a movie. And so movie theaters started offering these wacky incentives.
Oh, yeah.
Trips.
Yeah, it was huge. In Minnesota and actually throughout the country, one of the terms that people were very familiar with were bank nights. And bank nights basically meant people went to the theater, and if you got lucky, you got money. They paid you to come see the movies, and that's how they managed to keep the audiences pretty consistent throughout the early years of the Great Depression, even though people really didn't have much spending money to go around. But that kept up for most of that decade, and only petered out around World War II.
One of the other things that I hadn't realized until I read the book was that the good movie theaters were all downtown. You know, there aren't any movie theaters like the North Shore or the Chateau or the movie theaters that you talk about in your book, you know, kind of out in the quote-unquote suburbs. The good movie theaters, where the nice people went, were all downtown.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the Fargo Theater, too. I've been in the Fargo Theater a number of times, and that's another one of those gorgeous old landmark theaters. They were all downtown.
Right. In the day, they would call them the first-run theaters, the ones that when movies first came out during the 30s and 40s and 50s, they were shown only in these downtown first-run theaters. They got the first crack at them. And so if you wanted to be among the people who saw Around the World in 80 Days for the first time and could go and talk to it and brag to people that you saw it, that's where you went, to those downtown theaters. And then after a few weeks or after a couple months, those movies started moving out to the suburbs and that type of thing, where there were smaller theaters that weren't nearly as fancy as the ones downtown.
So you weren't going to necessarily get any date points for bringing somebody to to go see a theater in the burbs.
Yeah, you were a cheap date.
So in the 70s, we started with the whole multiplex, multiple screen things. And this, of course, was part of the North Shore's tragic heritage. Mm-hmm. The downtown theaters began to show porn.
Right. Certainly a lot of them did, and that was the only way they were able to stay alive. Some of them survived it. In many cases, they ended up being in parts of town that succumbed to urban renewal and that type of thing. And in the North Shore's case, it was just one of these examples of a theater that fell on hard times, but managed to stay away from the wrecking ball and was resurrected later in life.
Yeah, and only by a real concerted effort, obviously, because it would have been so much easier, I'm sure, so many times after it had fallen on such disrepair to say, all right, let's just skip it and start over. Another tragedy. I've been wondering about this my whole life. My question is answered. Another tragedy in the 80s was the demise of the drive-in theater. And it was not because people hated drive-in movies. It was because land got expensive.
Yeah, it was all about real estate.
Oh, for heaven's sake, who would have thunk it?
I didn't. That had never occurred to me.
No.
But I did get to talk to a couple of gentlemen who owned drive-in theaters during the 50s and 60s, and that's what it was all about. You had this big piece of land that you believed over time would gain value as people started moving out in larger numbers into the suburbs, that land value would go up. And that's exactly what happened in almost every single case. And so we've only got just, you know, a handful of drive-ins that even survive today in Minnesota.
That's just so tragic. So then the final chapter is called Renaissance. And, of course, that's a happy chapter. And we love that chapter because, you know, up here we think about the North Shore in all its renewed glory. But I'm really curious, Dave, what's going to become of us? We have these memories tied into people, the memories that we have of these glorious old theaters or even of the drive-ins are of a family night or a wonderful date or even maybe a horrible date. We have these wonderful memories tied into going to the movies, the buying, the ritual buying of the popcorn, the sitting down in your seat, the lights dimming, sitting quietly, you know, eating a little snack, not a full meal, people being quiet, not being on their phones. We're a whole, you know, the movie etiquette started to decay, and now we sit at home in our jammies and we stream Netflix.
Yep.
What's going to become of us, Dave?
Well, all I can tell you, Lisa, is there have been quite a few times in the history of motion pictures and motion picture exhibition, if you want to use that term, that people have been predicting the end of the world. Maybe the most obvious example is television itself was going to put the movies out of business, and people weren't going to want to go and sit in a theater with a bunch of other people to watch something on a big screen for 2 hours when they could just stay at home and watch in the comfort of their living room. And the fact of the matter is people keep going. And I do think that there is something about that communal experience that we have when we do go to a theater and can enjoy and be part of the laughter or the gasps or whatever it is that is being evoked by the pictures on the screen. People have kept going no matter what the technological changes have been. And although it's hard for me to picture at this moment how the movies are going to survive with the advent of Netflix and streaming and all these types of things, my knowledge of the history tells me that probably we're going to keep going to these things and that the theaters are going to survive. They may not look like they do right now, but I'm guessing that movies have a way to go before their demise.
People still show up at midnight in costume for Rocky Horror.
Yep.
And people still line up, you know, for the Star Wars movies the night before. So, I mean, I don't know if theaters can make a go of it on just, you know, a couple of pictures like that, but people still do say, you know, you could say, well, I'll just, you know, wait 3 months and for it to come out online. But people say, no, I'm going to pay whatever. And I want to go sit in the theater and I want to actually go and see it in the theater.
I think a really good example of that is what we're seeing with this movie Black Panther right now. This is really showing signs of being a community event. People could wait around, but they this is something special, especially obviously in the African American community, and people want to be part of that communal experience, and that's pretty exciting. And I assume that we'll see more of those as time goes by. And if the movies are going to die, I think it's going to be a little while before we see that.
I plan to even get out of my jammies, put on clothes, and go to see Black Panther in a theater. So that's
me too.
That's how far I'm willing to go, Dave. Dave, thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. I loved your book. I'll be in touch with the Minnesota Historical Society Press because the world definitely needs Minnesota Picture Show.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that.
Dave Kenny, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Dave Kenny's book is called Twin Cities Picture Show, and it's out now in paperback.